By some estimates, the average household spends an astonishing 40% of its food budget eating out. That's a lot to digest. Hi, I'm Rob West. After housing and transportation, food is probably the next biggest item in the budget. It's also a place where you can easily make changes that will save you a lot of money. I'll talk about that today, and then we have lots of great listener questions ahead, but we won't be taking your live calls today because this program is pre-recorded. This is Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. Biblical wisdom for your financial decisions. Okay, obviously I'm talking about cutting back on eating out and preparing more of your meals at home. I know that a lot of families have two working parents, or maybe mom or dad's busy driving vans full of kids to soccer or baseball practice, and that it's difficult to avoid the convenience of fast food. But there's always a cost for that convenience, and not just with money. Fast food tends to pack on the pounds, and when you eat out, you have less control over nutrition. So those are all good reasons to eat in more often, and it starts with planning. In this case, menu planning. How many times have you looked at something in the cupboard and thought, why did I buy that? You can avoid that by planning out your meals for the week, breakfast, lunch, dinner, and snacks before you go to the store. This also allows you to choose healthier options like fruits, vegetables, and nuts. When you're making up your menu plan, choose meals that you can make ahead of time over the weekend. It takes the guesswork out of what to eat during the week and all that last-minute scrambling. Once you have your menu plan, you can list all the items you need to make those meals. Then, take an inventory of your fridge and cupboards, crossing off stuff you already have. What's left is your shopping list, and when you go to the store, stick to your list, and you'll start saving money right away. That can be hard to do, especially if your stomach is grumbling from all that meal planning, so maybe have a snack or eat a meal before you head out to the grocery store. That's one way to prevent impulse buying. Here's another one. Try to avoid the middle sections of your grocery store. That's where they put things like cookies, candy, and chips. If you're shopping after work with a low energy level, it's hard to resist those things. But if you concentrate on the outer sections of the store, you'll be able to pick up a lot of the items you need for your menu plan, things like meats, vegetables, fruits, and yogurt. Obviously, you'll have to duck into the middle for certain items, but do a quick surgical strike and get back to the safe outer zone. You'll also want to stock up on staples when you can get them at a good price. Cereals, rice, cornmeal, and oatmeal are often sold in bulk at bigger stores. You also want to choose lower price options for protein in your meal planning. Hamburger costs less than steak. Chicken costs less than hamburger. And working a meat-free dinner into your weekly menu plan will also save you some hard-earned money. And it almost goes without saying, making coffee at home and taking it to work is a lot cheaper than buying designer coffee. The same goes for water. Bring a bottle from home instead of buying it out. Another great idea is to take advantage of the free pickup option that many larger grocery chains offer now. There may be a minimum order required, but it's not difficult to meet. Just go to the store's website, sign up for curbside pickup, and check the items you need. That way, you're not tempted to buy unnecessary items while pushing a cart around the store. And you can keep a running total of what you're spending, making it easier to stay on budget. Curbside pickup is also a great option if you usually have little ones hanging on the cart yelling, "Buy me this!" Here are some other ways you can avoid overspending on groceries. Be careful where you shop because prices vary. Generally, the bigger the store or chain, the lower the prices. The service may not be as great in warehouse stores, for example, but you can make up for that with savings. Of course, some of the big box grocery stores have membership fees, so that's an added cost. But if you shop there even once a month, it's probably worth it. One thing to consider, though, the packages at those stores tend to be gigantic, so make sure you can use up the item before the expiration date and that you have room in the fridge for that 2-gallon jar of pickles. Now, there's one more way to save on your grocery shopping, and that's by not leaving home at all. You can buy a lot of household necessities online from sites like Amazon and other online merchants, so try to take advantage of offers for free shipping. So those are some things that can help you eat more of your meals at home, saving you a ton of your hard-earned money in the process. As I said, we're off today, so don't call in, but we've got some great calls lined up in advance, so we'll go to those just around the corner. I'm Rob West, and we'll be right back.
For your walk with Jesus, I'm David Wolin with Haven Today, inviting you to anchor your day in God's Word.
Are you the kind of person who keeps a day planner? Do you make a to-do list and check things off as you make progress? Staying organized can help you get things done, but what you write down is only what you hope to do, what you intend to do. Contrast that with Psalm 139, which tells us that God has already written down what will happen in your day and in mine. Listen to this. It says, "All the days ordained for me were written in your book before one of them came to be." And that's a truth to steady you in the busyness of life. You can rest securely in Christ, trusting Him for every day that lies ahead. Hey, all you need is 60 seconds and a smartphone to try out the print edition of Anchor Devotional. Just visit getanchor.com.
Frustrated by your health insurance? Confused by the network restrictions and increasing premiums? There's a better way. Christian Healthcare Ministries. CHM is a Christian community delivering a faith-based solution to the high cost of healthcare. Take back control of your healthcare with the ability to choose a provider you trust with no network restrictions and savings of up to 40%. Learn more and enroll today at chministries.org/faithfi. That's chministries.org/faithfi.
Started playing basketball at 9 years old. I ended up having teammates that were my teammates all the way up through high school. So the Lord began to challenge me. Abe, you're a Christian, but have you ever shared the gospel with your teammates? I began to realize, no, I hadn't. What I'm saying is that God moved me to be concerned beyond me. It is impossible for you to be truly born again, yet you remain unconcerned about the people around you.
Tune in to the Hamilton Corner, weekdays at 5 p.m. Central on American Family Radio.
What if buying groceries, gas, or dining out could help change lives? With Christian Community Credit Union's Cards That Give to Missions, you can help spread the gospel, combat human trafficking, and protect vulnerable children with every purchase at no cost to you. Apply for your card today. More information is available at joinchristiancommunity.com. That's joinchristiancommunity.com. The credit union is an underwriter of this ministry. Membership eligibility required.
Do you feel like your hands are tied with debt, preventing you from serving God? If you have credit card debt, Christian credit counselors can help. Through our debt management program, we can get you out of credit card debt about 80% faster while honoring your debt in full. For more information on how Christian credit counselors can help, visit ChristianCreditCounselors.org. That's ChristianCreditCounselors.org. Or call 800-557-1985. 800-557-1985.
Great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. Our team is away today, so don't call in, but we lined up some great questions in advance, and we'll be going to those here in just a moment. Let me also remind you that the advice that I give each day on this program is general in nature. We offer principles and ideas that apply at a high level. They are not personalized, so that's why you should always seek professional financial advice. And if you'd like to find a professional who shares your values, we, of course, here at Faith and Finance Live recommend the Certified Kingdom Advisor designation. These are men and women who've met high standards, and they've been trained to bring a biblical worldview of financial decision-making. You can find one at faithfi.com. Let's begin today in Tennessee. Jane, you'll be our first caller. Go right ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Sure. My husband lived in Georgia for 19 years at a residence down there. We recently married in September of 2022. He has lived in Tennessee since. His plan is to sell the property in Georgia and pay off the remainder of the house here, which is about $58,000, to put a substantial amount more into some improvements here as well. And the remainder he was looking at possibly putting into a retirement. We're looking to see how we can avoid paying as much capital gains as possible, whether there's a time limit from when he moved here that he needs to get that property sold in Georgia? And then is there a time limit to invest the money that he would make off of that sale here?
No. And so are you wondering about capital gains on the property?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So the rule on that is if you take the date of the sale and go back 5 years from the date of the sale, as long as he lived in that, if he's the one on the deed, two out of the last 5 years, so 5 years back from the date of the sale, any 2 years of that period, then he would qualify for that capital gains exclusion of, as a married filing as a single person, up to $250,000, married filing joint, up to $500,000 in gain that would not be subject to capital gains tax. And then anything beyond that would be, and that's based on his taxable income, as to which bracket he would fall in. If the gain, not the selling price, but the gain is less than that $500 or $200, depending on whether he's joint or single filer, then there is no capital gain. And it doesn't matter what he does with the money after the sale. That has nothing to do with it.
Okay. Okay. So he, and then there's no time limit. If he did fall into having a capital gain, is there a time limit that he has on any of that to invest it somewhere? And could he possibly, if there's a capital gain, invest the money into a retirement account, or does that still come back against?
No, yeah. So the capital gains, what he does with it, the only time that it matters what happens after the sale is if he's doing a 1031 exchange where he's taking it out of an investment property and putting it into another investment property. And so you can essentially push the gain down to a future sale by keeping it invested in a similar type property. And you've got a window of time. You got 45 days to identify the property and 180 days to close on it. But as that's not what's happening here. So there's nothing that relates to how he uses the money after the sale that affects capital gains in this case. So the only consideration is whether or not he's going to have a capital gain. And that's going to come down to number one, how much gain does he have? And then number two, does he qualify for the exemption related to this being his primary residence for any of the 2 years prior to the date of the sale? And that window of time goes back 5 years. And if that's the case, then he can set aside up to either $250,000 or $500,000 of the gain and then pay gain on anything that goes above that. But if he qualifies for that because he lived in it two out of the last 5 years prior to the sale and he's under that threshold that's excluded, then he doesn't pay any capital gains, and it has no bearing on what he does moving forward. Now, his ability to get that into a retirement plan moving forward just has to do with what retirement plan you're talking about. So, you know, if it's an IRA, he can make a contribution. If it's a 401k or a company-sponsored plan, well, he could only put it in through salary deferral. But again, that has nothing to do with the sale of the property and whether or not he has capital gains on that sale. Does that make sense, though, Jane?
Yes, that does make sense. Now, he's lived here for the last 18 months. Is that a problem?
No. So long as, you know, if we take the date of the sale, go back 5 years, as long as he lived in that home that he's selling for two out of the last five. Now, it could be that for 3 years he's lived somewhere else. But if you go back 5 years, the first 2 years, you know, he lived in that as his primary residence, he still qualifies. So, you know, he's got a 5-year window from the date of the sale looking back, and he just has to be able to say, I lived in that home for 2 out of these 5 years, regardless of what he's done the last 12, 18, or 24 months, if that makes sense.
Okay, that's good. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Okay, you're very welcome. Hey, all the best to you, and we appreciate your call today. Let's go to Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hi, Ann. How can I help?
Hello. Good afternoon, Rob.
Hi.
I'm so very excited that I have the opportunity to ask you a very important question to me. Now,
okay.
I've been studying the Bible for just a little over a year, and I do now have the understanding that with respect of tithing, I must recognize its holiness and return it to God. And Rob, I'm embarrassed to admit that I just started to tithe, but I want to ensure that I'm doing it right. Who, according to the Bible, should be the recipient of my tithe?
Yeah, it's a good question. So here's my perspective on that, Anna. First of all, I appreciate the diligence with which you're thinking through this. Clearly, you want to be found as a faithful steward of God's resources. I think that's the heart posture that God certainly wants. What we see in the New Testament, because we're under the law of Christ, not the law of Moses, we see giving that Jesus references many times. That's, I think, sacrificial. We see that with the, his recognition, if you will, of the widow that gave out of her poverty, the widow's mite. We see that we're to give proportionately. It says, to whom much is given, much is required. We see that we're to give freely and cheerfully. The Bible says we should give cheerfully, not under compulsion. And so we shouldn't do it out of a sense of obligation, but really, I believe, an overflow of our gratitude to God for what he's already provided for us. Before even the financial resources he's entrusted to us, he's given us the free gift of eternal life through the shed blood of Jesus and his death and resurrection. And when we place our trust in him, now we're then reconciled to the Father in a right relationship with him. Well, just out of gratitude for that, I think we should look to be giving to support the work of the Lord. And as we think about being a manager of what's God's, not 90% is ours and 10% is God's, 100% is God's. So with that understanding, I like the idea of using the guideline of the tithe from the Old Testament and referenced in the New on our increase as a starting point. And I think that's what it should be. We should give beyond that, but using that as a starting point. Now, we see reference to the storehouse. The Israelites had a storehouse in the temple where they kept the tithes of food for the priests and Levites. We see that the storehouse was part of God's provision for the priests who served in the temple and the Levites who had no land of their own in Deuteronomy. So I think the best representation of that today is our local church. And I would say, at the end of all of this, that's where we ought to give our tithe and then look to give beyond that other places on the heart of God. Stay on the line. We'll talk a bit more. We'll be right back.
Zillow Home Loans has once again crossed the line of appropriate ads. Their latest commercial features two men sitting on the sofa, with one man giving a handmade gift to his partner as they are saving money for their future home purchase. And it's airing during family viewing time. This is further normalizing of sin and the LGBTQ agenda. So 1 million moms must speak out. If you agree with us, please sign our petition at 1millionmoms.com. Share it with your friends and family at 1millionmoms.com.
FaithFi is grateful for support from One Ascent. One Ascent believes that your values inspire why you invest and how they can inspire how you invest. One Ascent's goal is to provide solutions designed for every need and invest in businesses that bless the people and places God has made. They want to help investors do well by doing good, to explore a new way of investing that aligns with your values. More information is available at oneascent.com and by clicking Analyze My Investments.
Thoughts of the child you were carrying keep pouring over in your mind. A deep, unrelenting sadness overshadows your days, and you wonder if you will ever feel whole again. There is hope and healing from a reproductive loss. Call the International Helpline, 866-482-LIFE, and talk with someone who has been where you are. Your call is confidential, and we will help you find healing. 866-482-LIFE.
We are grateful for support from the Eventide Center for Faith and Investing. ECFI is an educational initiative of Eventide Asset Management that seeks to help Christians understand and practice biblically faithful investing. They do this through their podcast and online journal featuring articles from industry thought leaders and their course called Discover God's Story for Investing. More information is available at faithandinvesting.com. That's faithandinvesting.com.
Rob West of Faith and Finance.
If you've listened any length of time, you're aware that we often underscore the importance of preparing for the future. Well, as you look into the future, I suggest you consider the AFA Foundation in your estate planning. Call 800-326-4543, extension 345. That's 800-326-4543, extension 345.
As the leading advocate for the Christian financial industry, Kingdom Advisors serves the public by promoting the integration of a biblical worldview across every aspect of the financial services industry. And we serve a growing network of thousands of Christian financial professionals, equipping and empowering them to carry biblical financial wisdom to their clients, peers, and community. For more information, visit KingdomAdvisors.com. That's KingdomAdvisors.com.
Great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance here on American Family Radio. This is the program where we apply God's wisdom to your financial decisions and choices, help you make decisions in light of God's word as you're a steward of God's resources. Let's go to Miami, Florida. Hi, Norma. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hi, Bob. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have two questions, and one of the questions is that next year I'll be turning 65. And I want to stop working, but I was seeing that if I start collecting, I'm going to have a difference because my full retirement is at 67. So it's going to be like $350 difference for two more years. So I was thinking of getting money from the 401k for at least a year and get some of the money that I have in savings. Or another question that I have is I also owe like $120,000 on my mortgage, and I was thinking also of getting some of that money and pay off my mortgage.
Yeah.
And what is
we still have my husband's 401k, so we'll be a little bit, you know, with the 401k that he has.
Okay, very good. So a couple of questions. So you said when you retire, you will be 65. Is that right?
Right.
Okay. And what do you have in the 401ks if you combine yours plus your husband's, whatever retirement accounts you have, what is the total?
It's going to be around $600,000.
Okay. And when you retire, what you're telling me is that as soon as you stop working, that without taking Social Security, what will your gap be in whatever income sources you have at that point without Social Security?
The gap will be like $1,500.
$1,500 a month.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yes. All right. And so you're saying, where are you going to get that from? And you're saying, I've really got three options. One is I could pay off the mortgage, and that would eliminate the mortgage payment, which would help. Second option is you could pull $1,500 a month from your 401k. And the third option is you could take Social Security early. Are those the three options you're considering?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Got it. Now, what is the interest rate on that mortgage?
3.75.
Okay. Will your husband still be working when you retire at that point?
I think he's going to retire almost the same because his job is not, work is not doing that well. So they think they're going to lay off a lot of people by the end of the year. So hopefully he's still working, but we don't know. So that's why I'm calling ahead of time.
Yeah, sure. And if he were not working, what would that $1,500 a month shortfall go up to at that point?
I think it will be like $2,000 with him, you know, not working.
Okay.
Because I do a little bit more when I see you.
Okay, very good. Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. You know, I don't think you should pull the money out of the 401k to pay off the mortgage. You know, I like you all continuing to pay that off. I mean, if anything, I might throw a fourth option in the equation here, and that is you continuing to work a little bit longer and using that as an opportunity to accelerate the mortgage payoff out of your current cash flow, you know, beyond what you were expecting to receive because you're not retiring as early. Now, I realize there's a lot that goes into that decision. So that may not be an option you're either willing to consider or able to consider if you just feel like you physically anymore. But, you know, that's certainly one option to put on the table. But let's say you do retire at 65. I don't like you pulling out $120,000 out of the mortgage, or excuse me, out of the 401k, because it's going to add it all to your taxable income, number one. And number two is you still have a very low interest rate, and you should be able to do better than that in the market. And so you could just continue to pay off this mortgage, you know, over time and not create a lot of taxable income, especially in a year where you've got your, you know, income from your W-2 and it, you know, that withdrawal from your 401k would be on top of that. I mean, maybe if you did it in future years, that'd be better, but certainly not in a year where you were working. So in that case, I think the good news is that, you know, we generally say, think about taking no more than 4% a year from your retirement accounts, because that way you'll ensure that, you know, you don't run out of money if it's invested properly. So with a properly diversified portfolio, maybe 60% bonds, 40% stocks, 70% bonds, 30% stocks, you know, something that's fairly conservative, you know, over a 10 or 20 year period, which is, you know, at least your time horizon. If at 65, you really need to be thinking in terms of 3 decades or 30 years, just because, you know, if the Lord tarries and you're in good health, you could certainly live into your 90s. Then the idea would be that, you know, you still have some stock exposure to create a growth component, and then you have more stable investments through the bonds. And you should be able to offset a 4% withdrawal rate. So you kind of over time maintain that $600,000 and you don't dip below that. The good news is that, you know, if you take 4% a year on $600,000, that's $24,000 a year. It's almost exactly what you need, which is $2,000 a month. So the idea would be, what if we did that just until you reached full retirement age, get your Social Security check up a little bit higher, you know, by about 8% a year guaranteed. And then at that point, you know, flip from pulling it out of your 401k to now getting it from Social Security. And then from that point forward, you could just let the 401k continue to grow. Does that make sense though?
Okay. Yes. So, right now my 401k, I have it like really like a money market. I was afraid that the market could crash or something. I haven't been invested.
Yeah.
I'm not making hardly anything.
Yeah.
I'm only 64. I don't want to risk it. So
right.
You think I should risk it a little bit?
Well, I think you need an advisor kind of to help you evaluate your options. And certainly once you retire, I would, because then you could roll it to an IRA. Yeah. I mean, as somebody who's 60 years old, I mean, you really need to be, you know, the rule of thumb says that you should have about 50% in stocks and 50% in bonds and fixed income. And I realize there's a lot of volatility that could come with that and uncertainty, but you've got a long time horizon here. I mean, you could live another 40 years, 30 to 40 years. And so you need to invest accordingly. Let's talk a little bit more off the air. We'll be right back. That's how many pairs of shoes the average American has in their closet. 1. That's how many pairs of shoes it takes to share health, education, opportunity, and the love of Christ to a child in need in the world. You can play a part in changing the life of a child today through Buckner Shoes for Orphan Souls. Visit giveshoestoday.org and find out how you can provide shoes for a child in need. That's giveshoestoday.org.
The FDA did approve this particular over-the-counter drug for terminating early pregnancies. This is a policy that not only should be challenged, it was challenged. This is a study that's done, and this is the data, this is the science. You can always question that and say, well, who is funding this research? Are these geared toward a specific outcome? But that also begs the question, where is our funding on our side for better studies?
Jenna Ellis in the morning, weekdays at 7 Central on American Family Radio.
We are grateful for support from Sound Mind Investing in the Faith and Finance program. If you have money in a retirement account or just a general investing account, you know the stock market can sometimes seem like a roller coaster. But it is possible to enjoy both profit and peace of mind in investing, no matter what's happening in the market. You can see a short video webinar on that topic at soundmindinvesting.org. Since 1990, Sound Mind Investing has sought to offer financial wisdom for living well. Soundmindinvesting.org.
Absolutely free. We know you've learned to be suspicious of those words, but really, you can get biblical financial wisdom delivered to your inbox each week absolutely free. Articles, videos, podcasts, and special offers on biblical resources. Nearly 60,000 people receive our free weekly wisdom email, and you can too. Create your free FaithFi account by going to faithfi.com and click sign up to begin receiving weekly wisdom in your inbox.
What we believe about the Bible is based on what we believe about its source.
The God Who Speaks, the award-winning documentary from the American Family Association, is now available in a special limited edition DVD set. This release includes a Sunday school curriculum and 2 hours of additional footage. Go to thegodwhospeaks.org to get your copy today. Thegodwhospeaks.org.
Paying too much for health insurance? Frustrated by high deductibles and increasing premiums? There's a better way. Christian Healthcare Ministries. CHM is a Christian community delivering a faith-based solution to the high costs of healthcare. Take control over your healthcare costs with a program from CHM that could save you up to 40%. Learn more and enroll today at chministries.org/faithfi. That's chministries.org/faithfi.
This is American Family Radio, a listener-supported ministry of the American Family Association.
Thanks for joining us today on Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West. Hey, the year's almost done. No, not the calendar year. It's the end of our fiscal year here at FaithFi. And if you're a regular listener to this program, you consider yourself a part of the Faith and Finance family, and you've found some benefit in the teaching and practical advice here on this program, well, we'd like to invite you to be a supporter of the ministry as we head toward our fiscal year end, June the 30th. Your gifts now, which are tax deductible, are really important to us. Whether you could give $40, $400, or $4,000, and it all will help us to reach our goal. You can do that at faithfi.com. Just click give. That's faithfi.com. Just click give. Thanks in advance. Before we head back to the phones, you know, Norma said something right there at the tail end that I think is important, and that is, she said, you know, I got a little scared and I went to money market because I just didn't think I could risk losing it. And I certainly get that. I mean, that is real. And I think it does underscore, first of all, this idea that, you know what, when we look historically at the performance of the stock and bond market, so long as we're properly diversified, we don't have all of our eggs in one basket, so long as we're taking the long view, meaning we're not investing for a short-term return, and we stay invested, we're not trying to jump in and out, then what wins over time, at least based on the historical trends, is being invested with the right allocation based on your age and risk tolerance. Despite the Great Depression, despite the crash of 87, despite the dot-com bubble burst in 99-2000, despite the financial crisis in 07-08, despite the pandemic, the market has recovered and moved to new highs. And as long as we're getting more conservative over time, and therefore we've got the time horizon to let's say, that stock portion recover and rely on the fixed income portion to provide stable income that we might pull from to support our lifestyle, then that's really the prudent strategy. But here's what that often requires. It often requires an advisor who can make those decisions for you, who's not making an emotional decision to get in or out of the market because it's not their money. There's an arm's length relationship, and they're able to take a more prudent, rules-based approach to buying and selling and asset allocation, and not kind of at the whim of the financial media or, you know, something else that's driving an emotional decision. I realize that's not easy to do, but I think that's the role of a trusted advisor. And then on top of that, somebody who shares your values, who understands this is all God's, who understands that money can't be our aim, that God and making him our ultimate treasure is our focus. Somebody who understands that we should give generously and maybe even do some hilarious, maybe a little bit scary giving when the Lord leads from time to time. And we should define enough. And you know what? An advisor can ask hard questions and hold you accountable in a way that you can't do for yourself. So I think that's something to consider just as you're thinking about navigating, especially kind of a tumultuous time where there's a lot of uncertainty, there's a lot of fear in the system, we're in an election year, we've got geopolitical concerns, we've got inflation, you know, we see the stock market volatility. I think that's where having a trusted, wise counselor alongside us is really key. Think about that. Maybe pray about that as you consider your own financial decisions. Let's go to Ohio. Hi, Penny. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
We recently purchased a used vehicle just this past weekend. It'll be a vehicle that our son will be using as he goes off to college. We purchased the extended warranty with it, and just would like your thoughts on that, because I'm kind of like thinking maybe that wasn't a good move, and the finance person that we met with said we could always cancel that.
Okay. Yeah. You know, what's interesting is if you look at Consumer Reports, you know, what they'll show is that most people don't benefit from extended warranties, and that only about 30% of them would buy them again. Now, does that mean that you will be in the category that can't take full advantage of it? Not necessarily. You may be in that category where you have a major problem and, you know, the fine print doesn't take away your ability to get, you know, that repair done, and it's well worth every dollar you put into it. It's just based on the surveys I've read, that's not the norm. That in most cases, you know, what folks find is they tend to be a little bit overpriced. They don't get used as often as people think. And a lot of times the fine print kind of takes away what you think you're going to be getting either in part or in full. And so I think the other option is to say, okay, I'm just going to go ahead and put that same amount of money in my emergency fund every month, maybe a separate fund just for car repairs. And if I were to put that same amount in that account, let it grow with interest, you know, I may have to replenish it over time, but I may not. And at least I've got that money available. So, you know, I think that's something to consider. You know, at the very least, I'd just do my due diligence and make sure you understand exactly what you're getting and what you're not getting. And then, you know, kind of read some reviews on it. But, you know, I think you could go either way. This is a used car, did you say? Is that right?
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And how old is it?
It's a 2016 Kia.
Okay. Yeah. And did you have it checked out by an independent mechanic?
Yes.
And then do you know kind of what the extended warranty on this used vehicle covers, you know, as you kind of dig down into the fine print?
So we just purchased it to cover basically the powertrain.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we didn't buy like a full extended warranty.
Got it. Okay. And what did you spend on that?
It came, well, and that's why I'm calling, because it, once I got home and like reread the papers, I'm like, oh, well, that came out higher than I thought it was going to be. So, yeah. It came to $2,100.
Okay. Yeah. You know, so I think again, it's just a matter of kind of looking at what are we actually getting? And you know, are we going to benefit from that? And there's just no way of knowing. I think the key is, you know, what if you were to take that same amount of money and just kind of stick it aside and just continue to let that grow over time? But also you can't place a price on just the peace of mind, that's coming with, you know, let's say you had a transmission go out. Well, first of all, is that covered by this? And if so, you know, and you had to take advantage of that, then obviously it would be well worth it. But I think the data says, at least from the studies I've read, that more often than not, you are not going to get the benefit back out from that. And so you just have to take that and decide kind of which, you know, would prioritize. Would you rather have the peace of mind that comes with spending that money, or would you rather have that money in your pocket and just hang on to it and use it either for car repairs or something else at the end of the day? Does that make sense?
It does. It does.
Yeah. Okay.
And I have one other question if I
yeah, go
can
for
ask,
it.
Please. So the finance person also suggested to us, because I had mentioned to my husband while we were signing papers that, you know, my intention is always to pay extra, not just the minimum monthly payment, so we pay it off quicker. And the finance person heard me say that, and he said, you should set that money aside for now, because in a few months, the interest rates will drop, and then you can come back and refinance your loan.
Yeah, got it. All right, let's do this. I've got to take a quick break, but when we come back, I'd love to tackle that. And we'll talk about what that looks like in terms of your possibility of refinancing versus setting that money aside and how you should think about that. It's a great question, Vinny. I've got to take a break. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Dr. Jessica Peck, host of the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, the home of happy parents and healthy teens on AFR.net. I serve as your expert guide to engage, equip, encourage, and empower you to navigate life's toughest issues with your teens. We explore health impacts and home strategies to create a safe space in an unsafe world. The Dr. Nurse Mama Show on AFR.net.
To sharpen the biblical worldview of Christians and to share the good news of Jesus Christ. That is the mission of the Christian Worldview Radio program. I'm host David Wheaton, inviting you to join us this Saturday morning at 9 Eastern, 8 Central, as we discuss all matters of life and faith from a decidedly biblical perspective. The Christian Worldview, Saturday mornings at 9 Eastern, 8 Central, right here on American Family Radio.
When you hear the phrase, rich toward God, what comes to mind? Surely it doesn't mean making God rich. Is it about us becoming rich so we can give? Or maybe it's an invitation to something much bigger. In the new Rich Toward God study, FaithFi has created a way for you to explore and reflect on a well-known biblical parable about a very rich man with a very big problem. Request a copy of the Rich Toward God study today with your gift of $25 or more by going to faithfi.com/give.
We are grateful for support from Timothy Plan. Are you unsure if your investments align with your values? Well, for nearly three decades, the goal of the Timothy Plan has been to guide clients on a biblically responsible journey with its mutual funds and ETFs. More information is available at timothyplan.com. Investing includes risk, including possible loss of principal. Before investing, carefully consider funds, investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses contained in the prospectus available at timothyplan.com. Read carefully before investing. Mutual funds distributed by Timothy Partners LTD and ETFs distributed by Foresight Fund Services LLC.
I'm grateful to have you with us today on Faith and Finance here on American Family Radio. Sit back and enjoy. We're going to cover a lot of ground here in our final segment. We'll get to as many calls as we can. Before the break, we were talking to Penny in Ohio about extended warranties. But Penny had a second question, and that is that she and her husband just bought a used vehicle, and they got a rate consistent with today's rates. And she was wanting to add some extra to the payment on a monthly basis directly to principal to try to get that loan down. And the finance person at the dealership said, I wouldn't do that because you can refinance this when rates go down. I think the key here, Penny, is those things are not mutually exclusive in the sense that if you've got the ability, you've already got your emergency fund in place and you know you're contributing to your retirement plan, you're giving at the level you're comfortable with, and you've got some surplus, I like the idea of you paying this down. I mean, your interest rate's what, like 7 or 8%, maybe more?
It's 9.5.
Okay, 9.5. So, you know, as soon as you pay down the principal, even if you're going to finance it down the road, that's now interest you're saving. Because the principal on a simple interest auto loan, it's the outstanding principal balance multiplied by the daily interest rate, which is your interest rate divided by 365 to calculate your interest payment. And so essentially you pay interest based on the how much principal you still owe and the number of days that you owe it. So by reducing that principal, you're immediately saving interest, regardless of whether or not 2 years down the road, you're now going to replace that 9.5% loan with a 6% loan and then ride that out for the rest of the loan and end up saving several thousand dollars. I think that may, in fact, be a very real possibility, and I would make sure you're saving, you know, at least 2 to 3% before you do it. In the meantime, why not pay it down and just reduce the amount of principal you still owe, and therefore eliminate extra interest that's being accrued in the meantime? Does that make sense?
Okay, so go ahead and start. The monthly payments start next month, obviously, to pay extra,
yes.
But then also look into refinancing when interest rates drop.
Exactly. And I would look to save at least 2 points on it before you did it. And in the meantime, I think it makes a lot of sense for you to be reducing that principal because, you know, you pay interest based on how much principal you still owe. And so if you can get rid of some of the principal, you're going to pay less interest while you're waiting to refinance when rates come down.
Okay. Yeah. Perfect.
Now, here's the only thing I would throw out is be careful when you refinance. Let's try not to extend the term because you may end up, number one, getting a lower payment. Now, if you're going to continue making the same payment regardless, that's fine. That, you know, will help you. But let's not push the term out where, you know, we got a 5-year loan and then we pay on it 2 years and refinance and then we get another 5 years. So let's keep bringing that term down consistent with what's remaining to take full advantage of that drop in interest rate. Does that make sense?
It does. It does.
Yeah. Okay.
And
good.
So is there a fee when you refinance? Like, is there a fee involved in the refinance? Like when you refinance a mortgage, you may end up paying closing costs again. Is there an expense to refinancing an auto loan?
There is, yes. So, you know, it just depends on the lender you're working with. A lot of times they'll charge an application fee. And so there are some fees associated with it. It's not going to be like refinancing a mortgage, but it is worth shopping around and just understanding what are those fees before you make the decision, because it's not the interest rate alone. You know, you are going to have potentially some fees and you just need to be aware of those and factor them into the equation to make sure that it is in fact going to save you money in the long run.
Okay. Got it.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you so much. I'm
You're
a new
welcome.
Listener to your show, and I have learned so much in just a few months, and I am so appreciative.
I'm so glad to hear that. Thanks for saying that, Penny, and call anytime. May the Lord bless you. Let's go to Orlando. Caroline, you've been waiting patiently. Go ahead.
Yes, I was telling her earlier, my husband died 2 years ago. We married young. I was 18 when I first married him, and he was 24, so we was young, and we was married for 42 years. It would have been 44 now.
Wow.
But he died two years ago.
Yes,
and I'm disabled. I'm disabled, and plus I get some of his Social Security, you know, as his wife.
Yes.
But I wanted to know, I don't mind paying tithes now, because we've been tithing for 40 some years. So I'm not trying to get out of it. And I do pay tithe now. But some people say, because I'm not struggling to pay my bills, but my medicine is, I'm on insulin. I'm on a lot of different medication, about 5 different medications for my blood pressure. But
yes, ma'am.
I'm just on a lot of medication. And I was talking to my sister. She's a person that's helping me out. She said something about a donut hole because my insulin is so high. She said, she was just telling me the, you know, the do's and the don'ts. And I got kind of nervous, and I heard the caller before me asking you about tithing. But see, I don't work. Some people tell me you're supposed to tithe out of your disability. And some people say you don't supposed to tithe out of your disability. And I don't know. I want to do right. That's why I'm asking.
Yes. Well, Caroline, I really appreciate that. And I'm so sorry to hear of your husband's passing. Obviously, you have honored the Lord with how you've managed his money for a long, long time. And ultimately, how you decide to give unto the Lord is between you and the Lord. Remember, God doesn't need your money. It all belongs to him. I think we should be givers, and we clearly see that in the Old and New Testament, that you know, we should not allow God's provision to stop with us, but we should give proportionately to what God has entrusted to us back to his kingdom, starting with the local church. You know, it is a little more challenging with the tithe. You know, it's simpler when we're, you know, we receive an inheritance or a gift or a salary from a work, from our job, because we know, absolutely, that's all our increase. With Social Security, it's a little different because you paid a portion of what's being sent to you every month. You paid in. And if you were tithing all along the way for 40 years on your gross income, then you've already tithed on that money and the government's just returning it back to you. Now, they're returning more to you proportionately than you paid in the sense that, you know, part of it was paid in by your employer, because you, if you were a W-2 employee or your husband was, then half of that that was paid into FICA for Social Security came from the employer. Half comes from you, the employee. And so they paid half of it. And then there's some growth component to what's in there, because if you live a long time, they're probably, you know, there's a good chance they're going to pay you back more than you paid in. And that's just because they took it and invested it. So, you know, ultimately that's between you and the Lord. I think I would pray about that and just establish your own conviction. You can't outgive God. A simple way is just to say, listen, everything I receive is a gracious gift from the Lord. And so I'm just going to continue to tithe on this money as I receive it and just say, Lord, thank you for your provision. Another approach is to say, listen, a portion of this I've really already, you know, given unto the Lord as I received it, and now I'm getting it back. And so maybe you say, listen, I'm going to treat half of this Social Security check as money that's being returned to me, and therefore I've already tithed on it. And the other half I'm going to see as part of my increase, because I realize that a portion of it came from the employer and a portion of it, you know, Social Security has invested. And, you know, that's part of the increase. And so I'm going to kind of tithe on half of it. I don't think there's a right or wrong answer here. I think it really is ultimately just something I would ask you to pray about, maybe over a couple of weeks' time, ask the Lord, Lord, what should I do here? And then just establish your own conviction on it and then give generously. Does that make sense?
Yes. And I will tell you this right here. Because I am a tither in the church that I go to, it's a small church, and I wanted to make sure I'm doing right, but if I pull back, because like I said, my medicine is real expensive. I bought a house after my husband passed. My everything just went up, bam, bam, bam. My insurance went from $2,500 a year to $5,000. Never had no accident. I'm 65 years old. It just seemed like everything just turned around for me. And I know that's a trick of the enemy now, but God has always taken care of us.
Yes.
We never missed paying our tithes. Me and my husband, together when he was living, we paid over $2,000 a month, because he made good money. He worked it at a phosphate mine. He made good money.
Yes.
So we didn't mind doing it.
Well, I completely understand that. And I would just say that's how God's economy works. We know God is faithful. You know, crank it through your calculator. It doesn't make sense. And yet we know that, you know, we're to give unto the Lord, and God is our provider, not the U.S. government, not your employer. No one else is your provider other than the Lord. That's clear in Scripture. And I think your ability to continue to give faithfully and recognize that God will continue to provide for your needs is an opportunity we have to trust the Lord, to show our gratitude for what He's done for us. And also just to be a part of His activity through your small local congregation and to other things that you're giving to, either through your church or outside of your church. So again, I don't think you can outgive God. And I would just say that it sounds like to me you would like to continue to give at the level you have been. And I would say if that's the case, then go for it. But I would say if you have needs beyond, you know, what you can cover right now, because you're right, medication's up and car insurance premiums are up and it seems like everything's up, and you're living on a fixed income and a portion of this income you're receiving is Social Security that you've already tithed on, well, I think that's between you and the Lord. If you were to decide to say, you know what, I need to cut back because, you know, I just can't make it all work. So I would just say, Caroline, ask the Lord what He would have you to do and then follow His leading, and we'll pray that the Lord gives you some wisdom in that. I'm Rob West. On behalf of my team today, Devin Patrick, Taylor Stanridge, and Autumn sitting in handling our phones today, on behalf of our entire team at Faith Fineman, Lord bless you. We'll see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.